Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Miss Eloise Bridgerton. Come on out, girl. Closet is glass. See through.
So there is a gay character on Bridgerton?
Yeah. I mean, kind of. But it really should be Eloise. She's like the least interested in men of anyone in that entire series, including the other men. So I must insist. What up, Cabrona?
What's up, Chingona? What's good? It's been a while.
It has. And it's not for lack of trying. I say this every time, but we tried. We did try.
We're trying. We have lives. I don't know how else to say that. But yeah, it's been a while. But like, I'm realizing both of us are like sports gays right now. Lesbian sports, in, like sports for women and lesbians in sports is like a moment right now.
100%. Yeah. I can't believe the lovely WNBA come up that has happened. Yes. And yeah, just in general, I know I have a men's soccer in the background right now, but
you do.
But don't judge me. It's the Euro. It's Euros time. Okay, like
it's okay. I would not judge you because like Dallas is in the finals, and by the time it comes out, either they have won or lost. So I'm not going to be delusional. But you know what? They won one time, and that's
good
enough for me.
They won one time out of four.
Really well.
They quite literally cannot lose again. If they want to win.
Actually, yeah, they can't lose again. And by now, they've either lost or won the whole thing. And I just want to say that is the most men I've seen.
Western Conference.
Yeah. Like, shout out the problematic-ass Mavericks. I love Kyrie. He's my favorite flat earther and one of the few basketball players who has worn a keffiyeh and been pro-Palestine this entire time. So I think it's actually very, very fucking cool. And Nike dropped him for being supposedly anti-Semitic. And now, yeah, I did not even hear about this. He's hated. He's hated. They think he's like, you know, he's anti-Zionist.
Yeah, as you should be.
Yes, he should be. But the only problematic thing about him that I'm going to let him keep is his flat earther shit. That is, he can keep that one. But he's my favorite flat earther. Shout out Kyrie Irving, whether they won or lost. So, and that's the most I want to talk about men ever. Anyways, the Wings are playing incredibly well. Arike is playing amazing. She didn't make the Olympic team, which I think is illegal. Mm-hmm. I think they need to get Arike on the team immediately, but whatever. Shout out Satu Sabulu. Shout out Rike Oguwambalu. Girl, if I said it wrong, I'm so sorry and I apologize. And not that you're going to hear this. But yeah, anyways, I just want to shout out everybody in the WNBA that isn't that homegirl.
Shout out LA Sparks, too. We won against the Lynx. That was fun. That was cute little moment.
Dude, yeah. There's like all that gay, all the gayness that is the Connecticut Suns. Have you seen that?
I have not. I tune in so rarely, but I'm going to go to a couple of games in the next month. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited for that.
I'm excited for you to go because I saw you on TV. Well, I saw your shadow on TV one time at a LA Sparks game and I was like, that's you. You're back there somewhere.
Oh, I forgot about that. I was back there. Yeah,
it was awesome. So, very fucking cool.
Yo, speaking of fucking women's sports, I'm so excited that Trinity FC has been, like, the brand has been revealed, that sick-ass maroon color wave.
Beautiful fucking color.
Yeah, what a name, too. It's brilliant. It's great. Our first recruitment was Amber Brooks, who is very famously known in the NWSL as the girl who gave the double bird to the ref and got a red card.
Oh, fuck yes. Fuck yes.
Yeah, girls with an attitude, here for it. And then we've also been staying really local. I love that because there are so many Texas soccer girlies. And we've got an El Paso native as a goalkeeper who looks incredible. She went to SMU.
Oh shit.
Yeah, I'm so stoked on it. I don't think we've even announced half the roster yet. I don't know that we have half the roster yet. But games start in August and the home opener is September 7th. I fully plan on being there, on traveling.
Fuck yes.
Literally day of the game type of vibe. So if anyone wants to
be there with
go,
you as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to try and get everyone to go. Like everyone in my family, everyone in my circle. Maybe I'll hit up my exes. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not. It's like JoJo Siwa shit.
JoJo Siwa. Oh, God.
But I just saw her recently.
Wait, what? You saw her in the wild?
No. So LA Pride happened, and for some reason she was on that list, and a friend hooked me up with some tickets. So I went for the laughs, and
wow.
I went to her set, and it was indeed funny. So, yeah, good time.
What? I saw that your homie Daniel met Rosalia at LA Pride. I was like, what the fuck am I seeing right now? That's so random.
Yeah, I was going to go to the Rosalia Pride Parade, actually, too, but ended up doing some other Pride related soccer things instead, and definitely missed out on that.
Yeah, you were doing that resolution back in the day, so that would have been, yeah, full circle been, moment.
It was a moment that was supposed to be mine. I'm very, very bitter about it.
Because I know how you went up for Rosalia back in like 2017, 2018.
You know,
like,
before everybody else.
Yes, on, you were on that before everyone else.
But it's okay. I'll be fine. I'll survive. I try not to think about it.
I'm sorry I reminded you.
It's okay.
Oh, man. Okay, so moving on to less sad things. Happy Pride. We're gay this month.
Allegedly. Yeah.
There's no proof.
Yeah, speaking of gay, second season of Lady Parts finally came out. What was that, like a 2-year wait? God. It was a long wait.
Incredible. One of the best things I've ever seen.
It was really, really good. What a season 2. They did not miss a beat. It's so good. You guys have to catch it. It's on Peacock. And yeah, I loved it.
Well, I hope to eventually talk about it because I feel like the season went in a direction that I thought was interesting and different, and it kind of, I don't know, like it does something, it ends on a perfect note for me that I think I didn't see coming, and I should have, you know. It was just like, oh well, yeah, that's the answer. So yeah, I really loved it. It was one of the best things I've ever seen, ever, honestly. Fucking badass.
Yeah, 100%. I also accidentally watched the South Park Ozempic episode or movie, whatever.
Yeah.
I maybe it's just because I haven't seen South Park in so long, but they were so critical of the American health system that I was literally like, wow, do I love South Park? Like,
like, I don't know. They did like another episode about like the Afghanistan war and America like blowing things up, and like looking at it with like the lens that we have now, it was like, wait a minute, maybe we were the dumb ones who didn't understand South Park. Like,
yeah, they're now a little ahead of it.
They've always been on this kind of vibe, apparently, and I just wasn't allowed to watch it when I was little, so, you know, it didn't really click for me. It wasn't all there. It was all, like, very crude humor, but then, like, they're actually very critical of everything America does in a very interesting, very fuck you kind of way, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, I apologize. I apologize, South Park. I was not familiar with your game. Yeah.
That, I love that. Oh shit, dude. Yeah. What else have we been watching? I'm trying to like think.
Unfortunately, Bridgerton, as you can tell from my intro.
No. Why would you? No, I'm playing.
Well, the thing is that Nicola,
she's great.
Who's the lead? Like, how often do you see these romantic ass like shows have like this plus size girl who's Irish playing English, but also very pro Palestine, like outspoken. Because you know, Ireland, like, they get it.
They're about it.
They fucking get it. So I had to support her. Not that I didn't watch it before, like I did, but begrudgingly. This time I watched it on purpose. And
on purpose.
Yeah. And I will say it was split into two parts. The second part just came out. And the end of the second part, I won't like fully spoil it, but like what they brought, like they, it actually has all the straights up in arms because they veered away from what the book does and did something very lesbian. And it's at the very
end. Caught my attention.
Literally, like attention. Probably like last 10 minutes of the entire season, late in the series. Mm-hmm. But it's really setting up for the next season to be very cute and gay. And so in 2 years, we might have a cute little payoff.
In 2 years. No, actually, I heard about this. My friend Desiree did our artwork. She told me that the fandom had become toxic because of this. Because all the straights were like very against this
diversity
change,
like the whole purpose of the show. Like that's a wild take to me. That's a really wild take. And I also think reading a little bit about what this new character was supposed to mean and represent in the books, or did represent in the books, like it makes so much sense to me that they would change the gender of this person. Like, it makes so much sense to me. So, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm really, really, really happy about it. I watched the whole fucking thing just waiting for that moment.
Wow. Okay. So, now you've caught my attention. Now I'm, you know, maybe I'll watch the ending only. It's kind of like getting told to watch Warrior Nun. Like, I'm like, I don't know. And then I watch it and become obsessed with it. But, I mean, I just like Nicola. What is it? Coughlin?
Yeah.
That's her last name?
That sounds right.
Yeah. And I love what she did in Dairy Girl. She was in this other, like, I don't know if it's on Tubi.
It's on Netflix. Feel Good. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about Feel Dairy Good. Girls. Yeah. What is Feel Good?
Yeah, that one's, it's kind of all over the place, but she's amazing in it. Her and she's like a co-lead with her friend, and it's about their friendship and mental health and stuff like that. It's actually like super funny, and I don't know, she gets to be and also the lead, you know, and she gets to be someone who's like not all there, someone who's working on themselves mentally. So I think it was super fucking cool. I love it as well.
Interesting.
Didn't finish it yet. We're almost done though.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
It's a good one.
It's a show, not a movie.
It's a show. And I really think it's on Tubi.
That's so funny.
Because I remember there being commercials for some reason. So I'm like either Tubi or like Peacock. But
yeah. Damn.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, I think I've just been working on my footy podcast, Boleros SFC Radio. We just had a guest that is like a pretty popular soccer TikToker who I'm a fan of, and she came on the podcast. I was really excited about that.
Really? I love this. Like there's so much like intersectionality in like women's sports right now. It's fucking awesome. I love seeing, like, I'm going to go to a Trinity FC game now. Like, who am I, right? Like, who are these versions of us? Like, I love that for us, honestly. No, yeah, I'm just excited.
Community, you know what I mean? I don't know.
What a concept.
Yeah. I'll see you guys there. I'll see you guys there.
I am excited. Yeah, I want to go to that too. So,
yeah.
What else have we been up to? I don't. Like, now that I'm here, I'm like, do I remember how to do this? Who am I? What am I doing? But yeah.
I got a job. I won't say where. I'll just put it up on the screen here.
Fuck yeah. Congratulations,
I love my job.
Dude.
It's fun. And really, really good people. So yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited for you. That's fucking cool. You got to like security. It's like, fuck yeah. Let me knock on wood somewhere. Like security. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, maybe I guess we can dive in. We have a cool episode. It's been moving parts. We had different plans and then last minute kind of changed it up. But as I was doing my little write-up, I realized it connects. It connects really well.
They connect.
Yeah.
They connect, dude.
100%.
100% connect.
Both
so,
on Hulu, I realized. Hulu stuffed. Like,
both on Hulu. You're right.
Yeah. So if you have Hulu, God, it's a good day for you.
Yeah. If you don't, then find someone to give you a password.
Yes. Login sharing. That's the vibe.
Fuck these subscription companies. They're all evil anyways. Yeah, actually, so like these two. So today, what we're going to be talking about, I'm going to be talking about Origin, directed by Ava DuVernay, directed and written by. And it's a, you know, it's a interpolation. No, that's not the correct word. It's a movie about Isabel Wilkerson's personal life and her process of writing Origins. It's not even a novel. It's like a,
it's like basically really nonfiction.
dense nonfiction, like
sort of like exploration book. Of caste.
Yeah. Yeah, exploration of a caste in America and in the world, actually, and how that's affected absolutely everything. And I would say it absolutely affects what you're going to talk about.
100%. Yeah, Under the Bridge, which funnily enough is also like a drama based in real life, that kind of follows an author as she's writing a book about this situation. Wildly enough, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of these people, there's like a lot of intersectionality and who is the victim in both of these. They're crossing over. One is explaining the other, right? But they go about them in very different ways, I would say, because Under the Bridge is more like a old school like detective story almost, yeah, slash
true crime drama for
true
sure.
Crime yes,
based on a real story. Go. It's true. It's real.
Yes, and this is you know, also, Ava DuVernay is based on a true story.
Yeah. So
yeah. Origins came out this year. And that's an important thing that I'll bring it back to later.
Actually, it was really last year. No?
I thought it was January of this year.
Was it? Yeah, you might be right. You might be right. You might be right. Scratch that.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it was like doing the festival circuits for a while. And so Ava DuVernay wrote and directed this movie that she dramatized the life of Isabel Wilkerson as she writes this really dense understanding of caste in the New World, or caste in, I wouldn't even say just the United States, caste in the entire world, caste that was caused by colonization. So I think it was really, really powerful that the movie started out with a scene of Trayvon Martin buying Skittles and Arizona tea. I think at that point in the movie, like, I didn't really know what I was getting into. I just saw a dude talking to somebody and I saw the Skittles and I feel like I immediately know what was happening after that. I was like, oh, this is okay. This is what we're doing. And it immediately goes to that scene. I like how Ava DuVernay is using these real life events and sticking them, giving us a chronological, semi-chronological order of how Isabel Wilkerson, Pulitzer Prize winning, by the way, is understanding the world around her and what leads her to write this book. And what many people have said is that they've compared it to something very recently that's also about a one-person biography slash dramatization of their life, is like Oppenheimer. And I'm thinking of things beyond that, like Beautiful Mind. And most of that is always centered around white dudes, like involved with like blowing shit up for the government. So it's never really like about a black woman being just intellectual and incredible and amazing and being super
grieving.
Smart and grieving, dreaming, absolutely existing in our modern world. And I think that within itself is powerful. And I think everything Ava DuVernay does outside of a big movie industry, because she has her own independent movie thing going on right now called Array. And in that, which she's exploring all, mainly she's trying to center and explore women, black women, people of color, and even putting behind the scenes black directors, women of color directors, anyone that's going to give like a different kind of insight into the way the world works. And I think that works really well here with Origins, which, you know, it's talking about something that's been happening in the United States and the world for a very long time. And I think she's really broken down a book that was kind of dense, kind of sleepy, about, you know, this, I mean, it's an unspoken thing in United States cast. So what did you think about that as you were watching this movie? Because like, she's exploring this really like dense thing and it's giving documentary, but like really good documentary. So what did you think about that?
Well, I think it was literally in the conversations that she would have with family members, she was always kind of talking about, how can I communicate this to a person that isn't writing theses for a living? You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
She was always like, how can I make this understandable to everyone? Like, this was like the purpose, I think, of the movie, to make this so digestible by anyone. Anyone can, like, reading that book, like, I haven't read it, but, like, I believe you. It seems like something that would be, like, a lot. It's a nonfiction, you know what I mean? You have to take your time. But with this movie, you get you get what you need, you know what I mean? And so she's kind of doing that with this movie, and she's also like adding this level of it because you're learning about this author and like and like really having like, her having like this unique insight on humanity in that moment.
Yep.
You know, like what it means to be human and what it means to have emotions and like to lose people. Because like the whole point of caste is to remove humanity. And it's like, so that contrast, I think, was really powerful. When I saw this movie, I was shocked that no one was talking about it. And it was, you know, it was like released not that long after the October 7th events. And in this movie, they're mentioning, they're like, look at what's happening currently today to the Palestinian people. So, yeah, it's an evergreen sort of thing, too. You know, there's always going to be something.
Yeah, no, I mean, for it to so closely reflect what's happening and our understanding of our place in society right now. And that's why I said it was a big deal for her to make this movie come out now and not next year, because, and that's the only reason why I know that she released it this year. That's why I'm like, no, I think it was this year, January, because she was fighting with lots of different distributions, you know, like Netflix. She wanted it originally on Netflix, but she wanted it to come out before the election. And many studio execs or any execs of any place were trying to get this to come out after, you know, and she's going, you know, I'm really fighting for us to see this movie before so that we can understand our history and which way we are moving in history. And I think that's really interesting within itself, is that like we get back to this idea of like, creating things for the sake of art is not, it can add many things, but I think what me and you have always believed with movies is that movies can like open and expand our worldview. And I think for a lot of people like us, people that are, you know, we love, you know, trash TV and things that are entertaining just for entertaining's sake, but I think at the end of the day we know and we understand that movies are powerful and they can not just change the way you think, but change the way you feel. And that's very, very powerful. And for her, I think everything that she's made, she's able to, I think at the heart of her, she's an activist. And I think the way that she moves that activism through the world is through her creativity. It's through her direction. It's through her empathy of understanding others. And I think she's coming from she's more of a humanitarian who likes movies and decided to make movies because that's how they've been touched by information and by connection. That's how they connect to the world, is through image. So I think what she's able to do with not just this, with Selma, the Harlem fight, When They See Us on Netflix. Yeah, that 13, the documentary on Netflix too. It's like there's so many things there. There's so many layers of, you can tell where her heart is and where she's opening and changing people's minds in the real world. And I feel like there isn't a lot of directors that are directing with that in mind. I think, again, she's a humanitarian who's made really beautiful things. And just like Isabel Wilkerson in the writing of this novel, this dense, scholarly, nonfiction retelling of America and retelling of the caste system in America. And I'm telling it because I feel like it's something that people, not white dudes in America, know that there is an unspoken caste. And I feel like especially us, we're like children of immigrants. I think we've always understood that there was a caste system. And I think most people, again, that aren't white dudes, know that there is an unspoken thing there. And she not only connects that, she makes that connection to Nazi Germany, she makes that connection to post-colonial India in New Delhi, where she filmed, there's a particular scene where they're talking about the untouchable caste in India.
The Dalit.
The Dalit, yeah. There's a scene where they talk about what the Dalits have to do to survive in that society, and it's an unpaid, I would say demeaning labor for the sake of just being demeaning. Like, it didn't make any sense. It's a cruelty. Yeah, and can you talk about that scene yourself? Because I know how I felt, but how did you feel watching that scene? We can describe it in a second, but how did you feel?
I mean, it's like, it's horrendous, right? Like, this is still here today. I think what impressed me, though, to be honest, like, defocusing that moment because it's awful. But to me, what was beautiful is that the Dalit people caring for each other. Like, there's this scene where one guy is, like, putting this, like, oil, the only protectant that he has against, like, literal, like, feces that he has to, like, go into. And he's, like, very tenderly, like, putting this oil on this man, like, trying to protect him. And it's just, like, it's such a human moment to remind you that this is a human person that they are treating this way. And, like, that's how effective it can be to make a movie like this instead of just leaving it as this book, leaving it as this intellectual thing. It's a human, emotional moment. So, yeah, it's really, really, it's cruel and it's awful what these people are forced to do day in and day out.
Yeah, and what they're forced to do is to clean human excrement in public bathrooms in India. And again, they, you know, they are made to do this with their bare hands and their body, and that's it. And again, there's this really beautiful scene of humanity. And I think, again, we go back to Ava being this incredible, empathetic human who is able to show us her empathy. And not just hers, Isabel Wilkerson's empathy and understanding of what's currently going on with caste. And, you know, Black Americans are often treated as untouchables and in this entire part of the world, because I wouldn't limit it to the United States. I wouldn't even limit it to North America, South America, currently in Europe, everywhere, you know. And I didn't completely agree with her saying who's at the very bottom of every caste system. I don't agree with that. I think there's like a, you know,
there's nuances and stuff. Yeah.
There's nuance there, right? You know, there's homeless people, there's undocumented people. I think they are at the bottom of every society, without access, without names, without addresses, without anything, right? I think they are at the bottom of that caste system. And I say that, and that's everyone who's in it, regardless of, again,
not just in America. Yeah.
Not just America, everywhere. But that scene in New Delhi, I don't know, that, like, I think I almost cried watching that, because I was just like, and I've stayed thinking about that scene. And I think I've seen this movie like 4 or 5 days ago, and or less maybe, but I'm still thinking about it right now. And I think it's gonna, I think, again, she's using image and empathy and humanity. And she's showing us what it is, what it feels like, what we see, you know. And I think that's beautiful. She's actually shooting on location of all these places. She's in India, she's in Berlin, and she's in Savannah, Georgia. Everything shot in Berlin is exactly where it originally, all the original book burnings happened, in those spots. Historically, she's at the libraries, looking at the books that they're gonna, that they, you know, they removed books from this library once and burned them right outside. And I think she's, you know, she's cutting through scenes of tiki torches in 2017, when the young lady was killed because of a,
a white woman was killed by a white man over this topic, and she was like exploring that, like, dynamic, like, how did we get here? You know, it's obvious, like, she's, that's where she starts to think, like, it's beyond race, it's like a whole other thing. And we're seeing that today too, you know, with, like, what's going on right now, who's attacking who, who's on what side, you know. So
and I mean, it's all pointing to, like, fascism, it's all pointing to the history of fascism in all colonized parts of the world and how that's affected the oppressed. And she does it brilliantly. A lot of people said it was like an unadaptable book, and I can see that as I'm reading it. Again, it's dense, it's scholarly, it's giving, you know, MLA Chicago citations. Like, it's giving, I'm traumatized, I'm thinking of all the papers I had to write in college, and I'm like, ugh. But I think that's amazing. And I think, dude, there's so much in this thing that I, again, it's not new to me, we know of it, but I think it just adds a layer of understanding that we're all in this together, kind of, you know. that's so lame to say we're all in this together, but it's like,
no, it's, yeah, it makes it affected. A global thing. It's a, it makes it a, like, a big global phenomena. It's not just like Americans have racism and they have this and they have that. We all have the same thing,
all of us. Yeah, and all of us were colonized.
And peoples. She makes so many like good points in the movie. One of the biggest points that she makes too is like that when people were enslaved and in that time period, these white people who own like quote unquote own them knew that they were human. They knew that they were not inferior. And I think like tries to sort of add that point to like the Nazis. Nazis knew that the Jews were not like less than them.
Yeah,
everybody knows this stuff. That's not the point. The point is power. The point is like putting them in that category, like knowing fully well that it's not true, for the sake of keeping them down and putting themselves up, you know.
Yes. And then there's another scene that we see where the Nazis are having that exact conversation that you just said right now, that they're actively going, how are we going to do this? Let's base it off of the U.S. model. And then they come over here and they study what the U.S. has done to the Native American people, what they've done to black people, what they've done to even the gassing of the bracettos when they crossed the border from Mexico to the U.S. to do work. That's where they got that gas. And I didn't see any of that in the book.
Movie. That wasn't really in the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Casually left out, and I'm not into that, you know. I'm like, feels like we don't have to go all the way to India or to Germany to see what's going on, right? Like, and all of it is coming back from what the U.S. was doing to people and how they got away with it. And they thought it was too cruel. Even they thought like Americans are just taking it way too fucking far.
Yeah,
you know, there's a part of,
and by Americans we obviously mean like the European colonizers.
Yeah. Exactly. Us indigenous / mystery folk, us, mystery. Right? Like, we don't know what the other part is, right? But, and it wasn't there by choice. I know we look this way, but it probably wasn't by choice. Our ancestors didn't have that, like, you know, luxury. But there's another part of and we were talking about how they knew that they were humans, how they knew that other black people were humans, and they needed to create a hierarchy to make money for profit, for greed, for control, for power. There's this other scene about public lynching, and in the book it actually gets more graphic. And I think what happens and why she's comparing it to Berlin so much is that, like, in Berlin, there are these monuments everywhere to what white people did to other white people. But the United States has completely erased, and not just erased. They've fucking put racist, asshole, evil serial killers. Their statues are everywhere.
Yeah.
And why are we supposed to remember them at all when they were actively rebelling in a treasonous way against the U.S. government? I'm confused. And why? You know, like, we know why. Duh, because in the caste system they're still white dudes.
The caste system didn't leave, it just adjusted, you know what I mean?
It adjusted. Jim Crow, Reconstruction, that was a lie. Everything that happened post Juneteenth is coming up. Happy Juneteenth, all the homies in Texas.
Or it just passed by the day that this releases. It just passed. Happy Juneteenth.
It just passed. Happy Juneteenth, homies. But there's like. There's layers to absolutely everything, and there's things that she didn't even put. But again, there's one part of it that's so graphic that they didn't put this in the movie. But what happens is after they would lynch someone or burn them alive, they would take the skin and write on it and send it out to their friends like postcards. And that's what the Nazis were like disgusted at. Like, even the Nazis were disgusted that they did that.
I mean, it's horrendous. They made an event of it. You know, like, the family went and took pictures. Like, yeah, it's a disgusting display of... This whole movie is actually such a feat because it's a display of disgusting things that humans do all across the world.
All across.
And very specifically in America. And, like, still somehow you're sitting there, like, getting in touch with your humanity through the lens of this writer. And through the lens of this writer looking at other people who did this hard work and this hard research to get us to this level of understanding, and just finding humanity in all the good people while they observe these atrocities, you know?
Yeah. And it's, and in America, you know, the difference again, Berlin remembers everything and they talk about it and they make it illegal. Yet here, I don't think they've even explored like a tenth of how horrible slavery really was. And I think anyone that doesn't understand how bad it was, these people that are willfully ignorant or I don't know, they just choose to go, oh, I'm not political, I don't do politics. And it's like, okay, fuck you. Like, just read one thing and get in touch with literally one thing, and then you'll start to understand and look at the reality of the American caste system, at least, right? And there's still people that refuse to do that and refuse to understand how deeply, deeply sadistic and evil and just fucking, it's so horrible. Like, the more you learn about it, the worse it gets. And it's just, you feel even like, I can't even comprehend it, you know, honestly. And that's what she's trying to say, is that we're heading in this direction of not remembering the past, you know, not remembering history and what it's always done to the oppressed. And there was only like one mention of Palestine in the whole movie, I will say. I don't know what was, this was started back, I think she wrote the book in like, she started writing it around Trayvon Martin. That's when it like happened for Isabel Wilkerson, and she was going through all these personal tragedy, losing her husband, Brett, losing her sister, Marion,
and her mom.
Oh my god.
Yeah, losing all in a very short amount of time. Yeah,
yeah. And it's her reckoning with the loss of the people that she loves, but also understanding that she had to do this thing, that this is what her gift was to the world. This is what she was going to give the world. It's her knowledge and her understanding. And she did it because she had purpose in it, and it created, she wrote an amazing, really dense book. And then it became a really interesting, almost PBS documentary style, like chef's kiss to Ava DuVernay, because I don't know how she did it, but yeah. She sees the humanity in everything. And, five pandusas for me. I'll shut up about it already. Watch it.
One last thing about it, you bring that up, actually. When you're grieving, your life is filled with all these questions. And this is a person who was already a very questioning person, questioned everything, researched everything. So when she's left with all this grief and just having to question, what the hell am I alive for? You know? Yep. Like,
what's the point?
You know, that, I think, took her to this like incredible perspective of life. And anyways, just wanted to mention that, because yeah, grief is like wild.
Huge.
And it just, yeah, it just puts you in like, it'll shift your entire mindset, you know, it'll change you at your core. And I think that's what happened here.
Yeah. And what would you give it? What would you rate it?
Oh God. I watched it again, maybe two nights ago, just head to toe. Beautiful, and all this done, you know, in a limited time, in a limited couple, in 2 hours. Yeah, it's must. I think it's like a must watch. Like, I would throw this on, you know, like when your teacher would walk into the room and roll in a little TV. That needs to be the moment for Origin, you know, like in every school. So it'll never happen. But what information to have? What core information to have, like, for a young person?
Yeah, and I think even last point, I think Ava DuVernay did an interview, and they told her, you know, the only real, the way to find out isn't going to be like critical acclaim or any kind of achievement. The real testament to what you made is whether, you know, are they going to show this in school in 20 years? Are they going to show this to anyone who's trying to learn something? Is this what they're going to watch? And it's like, yeah, I honestly think this should be taught in high schools forever. And critical race theory is something that they've been very, you know, they don't want these kids to know.
Let me tell you about critical caste.
Right? Like, and I honestly, yeah, I think this is going to stand that test of time. I think if people can just, you know, watch something for like, you know, 2 hours,
something incredibly palatable, incredibly palatable.
Palatable. So. Anyone could watch it. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's it. Last point. Sorry.
No, I mean, wow, what a movie! I feel like we could talk about it for 500 years. You know, it's
most definitely anything Ava DuVernay makes, like, wow.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, this will probably be pretty brief. This show was just on our radar from the beginning.
Yes.
I think Under the Bridge came out on Hulu, I believe, April 17, 2024, so a little earlier this year. It was developed by Quinn Shepherd. Fun fact, she's an actor who is queer and was like, you know, delved into filmmaking later on. She's very young. She's only like 28.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a mini series. It's just like one season. And it was based on the book of the same name by a writer named Rebecca Godfrey, who this series basically follows. I feel like there's a lot of leads in this, so it's a little like confusing and it goes back and forth a lot. But like we mentioned earlier, it's based on a real life murder of Rena Virk, and it was in Canada in the 90s. It's a very 90s show, and it doesn't surprise me to learn that the TV series took some creative liberties, but the book that was written by the person who was there was also a little inaccurate in some parts of it.
Mm.
But yeah, what fascinated us specifically though and drew us to watch the series, surprises nobody, but no one. The powerhouses, these leads, Lily Gladstone, yes. She is Cam Bentland or something like that. She's a Canadian cop who kind of like followed in her father's footsteps. And if you guys don't know who Lily Gladstone is, I don't know where you've been, but she's a Native American actor who we all have a crush on. And she was on Killers of the Flower Moon and on a Reservation Dogs. She's the moment, you know what I mean?
She should have been the only thing we watched in Killers of the Flower Moon. That's all I'm saying.
For real. And then the other lead is Riley Keough, who, you know, a lot of people know from a lot of different things. Quite honestly, she's Rebecca Godfrey in this. She always looks like she's up to something.
She's always doing some gay shit. Love song? Come on, let's go.
I mostly know her from the movie Zola. That's based on that Twitter thread.
Oh, Zola?
That's what I know her from.
I know her from American Honey, Love Song, and she was gay in something else with Juno Temple called Jack and Diane, I think. They're about werewolves. It's weird. But anyways.
Okay, I'll watch it. And then also notable in the series is Javon Walton, who's Warren Glukowski. He's that little kid from Euphoria.
Ashtray.
And Archie Punjabi, who played my favorite character on The Good Wife once upon a time.
Absolutely.
She's the shit. And yeah, overall, just a really excellent cast. Like, the people I don't know from anything else, they were all really, really good in this.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah. But like I said, the story's supposed to be about Rena Virk, the 14-year-old girl who was murdered in real life and in the series. Her family is Indian-Canadian, but also Jehovah's Witnesses.
Ooh, layers.
Yeah. So in this story, she's kind of like a teenager. Naturally, she's rebelling. And she's trying really hard to fit in with these group of girls who, like, really idolize gangs. And, And these quote-unquote, like, troubled girls, they, like, catch Rebecca Godfrey's attention. She has just come to her hometown, like, from New York, because she's like, I have to write about this place. And she ends up getting really involved in this story. She's originally just going to write about these troubled girls, but then a murder happens. And so, yeah, she befriends like the little ringleader of the group, which is Josephine Bell. And this girl, she like lives in a youth home. Idolizes gangs, like I said. And then things start getting a little spicy. I'm not like, not just because of the wild childs that are in this, but also because we find out that Rebecca and Cam have a history. So we're about to get spoilery. This happened in real life, so I mean, is it a spoiler? But yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's history.
Yeah. So this story starts getting complicated because there's this girl who's been bullied by her peers. And then there's this lady who has a weird history in her town coming back to write about those peers. And then there's a murder that was like a weird group activity, but also kind of just this one girl, Kelly Ellard, who is pretty much the culprit. And then of course you have Cam, who's a cop, and she's dealing with her own stuff. She has an adoptive white father. She feels like, well, he's like this dude that's trying to control her, you know, and you can tell he kind of like puts her down a little bit.
Cass.
And then also she has like feelings for this girl who she doesn't really trust, but she also has a really weird history with. So there's a lot of like Cam, Rebecca, like what is going on here stuff. Yeah. And they do like hook up and stuff. So that's cute.
It's such a dark show.
Yeah, it is. I honestly like it's in general, like, of course, like, there's a lot that this show has to do, but I think it struggles in it with its structure, like balancing that with like making it a lot more watchable. There's a really slow reveal that is not very effective because you have kind of already revealed that this happened. But in the flashbacks, we have a lot of moments of greatness, right? We have a flashback to how Rina's parents meet and how they end up being these like Indian Jehovah's Witnesses. It's this like moment where you get a big history because they in the past are seeking acceptance in their communities, and they change themselves to fit into these communities, not just for safety, but also just to have a community in Canada. And then many years later, their daughter's basically doing the same thing. She's like seeking acceptance and in people who are like not really necessarily like her, but she's like forcing her, she's trying to force herself to fit in. And for her, it ended up a lot worse than it did for her parents, unfortunately. Nope. Yeah. And also, like, you know, speaking of caste and stuff, the way that this fits in, it makes these really interesting distinctions between the girls who bullied Rina. Because we have Jo, who's this, like, ringleader, but she's also living in a group home, and she has very obvious insecurities about the things that she does not have. So, because she has this conversation where she's talking about a girl who has a locket from Tiffany's, and that just makes her so angry that she has to rip that locket off of this girl's neck.
Yeah.
And then Rina, like, has, you know, a supportive family, but she also has this, like, uncle who gives her the new Biggie album, and she's just, like, reacts badly to these things. She reacts violently to these things. And she's kind of like this obvious culprit, like the person that everyone is like, oh, it's got to be her, right? Because she acts so tough, because she talks a big game, and because she comes from this background. But then there's Kelly. Oof. Kelly is this like privileged girl, and they're like best friends. And you're like, you know, you don't like, it's somebody that basically doesn't expect to ever have any consequences. And you can see it in the way that she talks and the way that she acts. But she is a perpetrator. And
perp. Okay.
Yeah, she's the perp. You know what I mean? She's like the person who, like, at the end of the day, she killed Rina. Like, it's her. And she did it for, like, the most petty reasons. Like, not even good reasons.
Cast.
Yeah. Because, like, they've gone, you know, and like I said, I really do think that these other girls that were a part of this CMC fake-ass gang group, like, they just, like, were trying, they were all talk, you know, like, it wasn't real. But then Kelly, because of the way that her mind works and, like, the privilege she has, she's like, I can do whatever I want, and takes it to that next level.
Yeah, she's a true psychopath. And Izzy G, who plays Kelly Ellard, wow, fuck. And her and Vitrika Gupta, oh my god. And what is their one, they don't have her on here. She was Vitrika, Rina's actual friend, sort of, not really.
Oh, Dusty? Played Dusty.
Yeah, Dusty, Ayana Goodfellow. Oh my god, the kid actors in this are wildly good. Amazing.
And 100%.
It hurt. It hurt to watch.
Yeah, I felt myself so angry sometimes at, like, Josephine specifically, that I was like, oh, it's not real. Well, it is, but it's not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I really, like those. Yeah. I like those distinctions. Not like, but like the distinctions were made so clear in the subtext of like what these people's statuses are. And the thing about it that's odd is that usually it's like usually in caste they are separated, but in this case they are together, and like the differences then lie more so in their actions, because there's also a Warren, the like Javon's character, who is basically homeless because his parents kind of like abandoned him, and he's going through all this emotional stuff, and he's such an emotional person, or at least, you know, the author really focuses on making him out to be that, and he is in like a vulnerable place and then like participates in hurting Rina just because of that, you know. So there's like all these nuances of all these people who bullied and hurt ultimately Rina. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's just like the Kelly's actions and Josephine's words and all these things that all just led to the dehumanization of Rina in this moment. And yeah, It's just like a little complex little microcosm of cast in the modern day, or like in the late 90s, I guess.
And who it's affecting, you know, is like this white privileged sociopath, psychopath. Like, and she really reminded me of something Amy Adams was in called Sharp Objects, where there was another rich little white girl who was inflicting pain on literally people just because she could. It was truly like a terrifying, crazy accurate portrayal of like violence and sociopathy. Like, it was kind of scary. I'm like, Izzy G, who played Kelly, and Chloe Guidry, who played Josephine Bell. They're like, I saw them in real life. I think I'd be mad at them. I think I'd want to fight just because they did it so well. Not because I know that they're not like this, right? They're acting, but I think too well, you know, it's like on site if I see them, right? Like, but it was amazing because they, you know, I think. Can I jump to the end of what they do at the end of the series? So at the very end of the series, they show a picture of the real Rena Virk, and they kind of give you like an update on everyone. And of course, seeing Rena Virk at the end and understanding that this like brown, like Indian Jehovah Witness girl, she's, you know, at the intersectionality of all of these things. And then you see these white kids, but they did. It's like a clear definition of the effect of caste in the new world and who it deems unworthy of life and unworthy of friendship and unworthy in society. And so like I literally cried at the very end, because I was just like, there was so many layers of like pain to that, and it was the dehumanization of the other. And like, shout out to the series and to everyone who did this. Like, everyone was amazing. The story, the plot kind of dragged in the middle with the, like, you know, hippie episodes about, you know, doing acid and having like an understanding and an ego death, right? Cool. But what it really does at the end is like comes back to this idea of like who's deserving in society, and it's dark.
For sure, for sure. Honestly, like I said, it started to lose me, and I think it was because of the structure. I think it was most interesting at the beginning.
Oh yes, yeah. Yeah. When Rena was around, yeah, like, she was such a compelling actress and a compelling story. And did you see that? Like, they had to use a lot of the father's story to kind of fill in the blanks about Rena, because not Cam. What's annoying ass Riley Keough's character, Rebecca, was just kind of obsessed with these like little white kids, and like they had to pull from his story to understand her, because she didn't do a really good job.
He also wrote a book. There was a lot of like attempts to put this in the media somehow. Like, I think even Reese Witherspoon tried to make a movie about this, and it stalled out in development in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so this is the first time that they've like successfully really put something out outside of the books from Rebecca and from Rena's father. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, they also kind of address it in the series. Rebecca Godfrey she passed away a couple years ago. But they address in the series how like the parents confronting Rebecca and being like, hey, like, are you writing about Rena or not? Like, it sounds to me like you're writing about like the like people who killed my daughter. You know?
The criminals,
so that's why I think it's so interesting that they start off with this girl who is fascinating, who is interesting and cool, and then like fully turn it over to like all these other people who end up being leads. That's why when I talk about this, there's not one lead, there's like 10 leads in this story. And I feel like Rebecca is actually one of the, I mean, she has a semi-interesting story. She has a bit of a history there, but, you know, I found myself, just captivated by these child actors.
The kids, they were really good.
Lily Gladstone, you know, can act her butt off. Yeah.
What did you feel about how they ended Cam's storyline? Because I thought that was actually really fucking cool and interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish we could have gotten more. Obviously, it wouldn't really fit with the story. Yeah, but yeah, she has this like fascinating internal battle throughout the whole series where she's like, is my dad kind of racist, you know? Like, and yeah, she's like, you can tell she's always done the same thing that everyone, this is a common theme in this show, like everyone's just trying to fit into their community and to make it work. And she does the same thing with her literal like adoptive family. And then she's like, finally at the end, kind of like compelled after this, after these events, like, I'm gonna go find my like biological family and get to really know myself, because I've just been trying to be these people for a long time, you know?
Yeah. And then not just that, but like them being honest about what has happened to indigenous people, how they've had their children basically taken from them.
Yeah.
On like these strange, like, they, she was taken as a baby because they thought that her birthmark was like a sign of abuse or something. And she's like an adult and she's like, I literally still have that birthmark. I was not abused as a child. Like, that's literally a birthmark. So I got taken away for nothing. Like, my family didn't like abandon me. I was taken from them. And I think, like, again, had we not spent so much time with Rebecca, I mean, cool, but like the whole episode of her tripping didn't need that. We could have gone more into, you know, Cam's story, because she's so interesting and compelling to watch. But like, yeah, it kind of wrapped up too quickly for me. I wanted more on Cam, duh, right? Like, of course.
Yeah, naturally. Yeah, I mean, I wanted more of Cam. I really wanted more of Rena, honestly.
Yes. Yeah, they're amazing. All those actors were like really scary.
Yeah, so it's an interesting show, and it's interesting. Like, I feel like it doesn't put things into words and make things as obvious when it comes to a cast as like Origin does, obviously.
Yeah,
but because it's trying to do a lot of things, but yeah, I think it's worth the watch. It's always worth watching, like Lily Gladstone, to be honest. Yeah, so it's interesting. Also, there's like super random that I just remembered, but they have this thing where they call girls who are like less than, they call them BIC girls, BIC as in the lighter, because they're disposable.
Damn.
So yeah, there's some things that they're able to put into words, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and hearing like a police officer call them that, like, wild. Yeah.
That's crazy. They're little kids.
Yeah.
Also, what would you rate it? What's your rating?
Probably like half calf, you know?
Half calf.
Yeah, like I said, it struggled in structure, you know?
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I could have done with less Rebecca and more Cam and more Rena. So yeah, I'd give it like 4.5 bandulces, just because, like, Lily Gladstone, yes. And then Veritica? Fuck, Veritica Gupta, who played Rena Burke, was amazing. So, and you know, Kelly Ellard, who's played by Izzy G, is also terrifying. So again, it's on site if I see them. I'm gonna feel away. I'm not gonna do nothing. They're great people, probably. But if I see them, it's on site a little bit on the inside.
In my mind, a little bit.
In my mind, you know. And the fact that Kelly Ellard, the real bitch, is somewhere out there, I want you to hear this. I want you to find, like, if you can find me.
She
find
did the most
me.
Time. She just got out a few years ago, right?
Yeah, she changed her name and she got pregnant in prison.
Kelly
Sim. Yeah, she's literally, keep your kids away from this lady. She's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways.
But
deep,
yeah.
Sigh.
Yeah. It's
dark.
There's a reason it took us a minute to do this. Yeah. But as always, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, like, you know, with everything that we talked about in this, like, what's going on right now is, like, Israel is fully on this same vibe. They are dehumanizing
the
Palestinian people, and they have been doing this for 75 years so that they can get to these moments and absolutely, like, and it's not just Israel, you know what I mean? It is also the U.S. The U.S. is the blueprint here, and they are still on their shit. And by them, I mean we, I guess, and our tax dollars.
Yep.
If you're not standing against this, what the hell are you doing?
Ignoring their reality. Ignoring America and what it's always been and what it was really built on. If you can ignore that, then I guess you can ignore your own soul, I guess. I don't know how bad of a person you have to be, but there's real people in real life that I don't talk to anymore, because I'm just like, y'all are fucking weird. I can't be your friend. We're not cool. It's on site for you too. I'm so serious. Anyways, man. But yeah, thanks for coming back and doing an episode with me. It's fun. It's
nice. Yeah, we should do this more often. We say every single time.
Every single time.
Thank you to our Patreon donators who have stuck around with us. We actually are like really considering doing some like video content for you guys. So
yes,
hopefully we can make up for our many months of absence. Thank you for keeping this show going. We love you so y'all much, Patreon supporters.
You are the best.
All right, guys. Life is hard. We'll see you as soon as we can possibly muster.
Yeah. Bye, y'all.
Bye.